So good morning, everyone. Those of you who have been sitting for three periods, and those of you who have just arrived, welcome. I have to confess that today my heart is very heavy. You know, when I allow myself to bear witness to the suffering in McKinney, Texas, in Baltimore, in Ferguson, in Cleveland, right here at Rikers Island, with that young man who was in Rikers for 3 years because he couldn't make bail at age 15, and he was out. Charges were dropped after 3 years. He was out for 2 years and he just committed suicide. Right here in our town. Not in this distant McKinney, Texas. When we see that the suffering that comes out of our false idea of difference because of color of someone's skin, so much suffering, so much delusion, hatred, fear. You know, it makes me very discouraged with this life. You know, it's not new. And as a matter of fact, in a way, we could say we're thankful that it is now news. It is now, you can't pick up any social media or any kind of anywhere without seeing some horrendous act of hatred going on, not over there, but right here in this country, right here in this city. It's a good thing that we have the reporting of the press, the witness of these small devices, right? Do you ever ask yourself, would you have the courage to hold up your phone? Like that young man in McKinney, Texas, who had the courage to hold up the phone. How do we respond, we meditators, we Zen Buddhists? How can we make a positive move in this world? How do we serve as bodhisattvas? As peacemakers, as white peacemakers, as white allies. How do we calm our own hearts and minds and our own conditioning, so that we can act in a wise and compassionate and merciful way? How can we kind of assume a bodhisattvic posture? One that actually makes a difference, so that we're not causing more suffering and more delusion by our inaction, by our ignorance. We chant, sentient beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Who are those sentient beings that we vow to save? Are they the ones we agree with? Sentient beings, those that I agree with, I vow to save. How can we find it in our hearts to serve them all? To serve those crazy bikers in Texas, if you read about that a few weeks ago. How do you open your heart enough to save that first responder, that policeman in McKinney, Texas, who had attended to a suicide and then an attempted suicide immediately before arriving at the pool. How do we attend to the whole picture? How can we find it in our hearts to serve everyone? So, if you're here, you've already found a restorative place in the practice of Zazen, of meditation. But Zazen is not just facing the wall and zoning out by any means. It's much larger than that. You know, in the oldest Buddhist teachings, we have what is called the Eightfold Path. Path of freedom. 8 points in the life of the Dharma that are said to lead us through a way of finding the Buddha way that the Four Noble Truths indicate. So it's the Eightfold Path. Right view, right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. So that's kind of the platform, the original platform, the Eightfold Path. And today, as I'm thinking of how to serve all of those who are suffering, I want to look at the last one. The first one, the last one, the right concentration, the right samadhi. Because it serves as a foundation for us to have right view and right intention. So, some people see it the other way around, but I've always felt that the eighth one is what holds all the others, right concentration. You know, the word right, of course, some of us who are kind of rebels don't like that word. So it comes from sama in the Pali, which can also be translated as wise, or skillful, or wholesome. So wholesome, wise, skillful concentration. Concentration from the Sanskrit samadhi. It means the same as it does, you know, it's a good translation, concentration, because it's like distilling, taking the essence, concentrating. When we sit in meditation, we focus our energies. You know I come in the morning, and blah, 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 taking a breath. And having done this for so many years, it's only a breath. The focus comes. Concentration. You can feel it in your hara. You can feel it in your belly. Focus. You know, one of our basic introductory instructions is to put our tongue up against the roof of our mouth by our front tooth. It's amazing. In times of stress, something horrendous happens on the street, tongue goes there. Stop reactivity. Be present, completely present. It's the habit of concentration, this wholesome samadhi. It holds you, it's a together-making thing. It pulls all of you back to yourself. to your complete true self. Now, Dogen, most of you know, was a brilliant 13th century Zen master. Wrote a fascicle, a piece of writing called King of Samadhi. And in this version that is translated by Kaz Ta-Nehisi, I'll read you a little portion of the King of Samadhi, the King of Concentration, the King of Wise Meditation. So this is what Dogen says. Shakyamuni Buddha said to the assembly, "When you sit in the meditation posture, you realize samadhi in body and mind and give rise to an awesome virtue that people respect. Like the sun illuminating and refreshing the world, this sitting removes obscurities from the mind and lightens the body so that exhaustion is set aside. Enlightenment becomes as natural as a dragon curled up at rest. A demon is frightened even by a picture of someone sitting in the meditation posture. How much more so by a living person who realizes the way sitting motionless and at ease." Yeah. I love the imagery here, the awesome virtue, the sun illuminating. Suddenly, it's clear what was obscured. Even a demon, our little demons, pull away when they see us sitting in this wonderful, illuminating quality of concentration and focus. It's reminding us, Dogen is, that samadhi is right here. It's not like this, oh, that I will attain samadhi. It's right here. In your body. It's not a theoretical or abstract thing. Don't make it so. Make it your own. So Dogen says that this sitting, this samadhi, this zazen gives rise to awesome virtue that people respect. Consider that. That awesome virtue. Perhaps you don't even see it or notice it, that it arises when you sit. And you may not realize it, that you offer it to others as you walk out the door. That awesome virtue. So that's really what I want to get to today, is about this virtue that rises when we sit in zazen, when we practice this wholesome concentration. Like the sun illuminating and refreshing the world, this sitting removes obscurities from the mind and lightens the body so that exhaustion is set aside. Have you had that experience, I wonder? So I have to say that this morning when I sat down, I had spent entirely too much time on Twitter. And I follow a lot of social activists, black activists. So I sat down and I was pissed off, upset and despairing once again. I felt vicious, condemning some others. You know, I mean, it's so brutal, this country we live in. But what I was feeling is not righteous social justice. It was retaliatory rage. We know that such a mind simply creates more, replicates more and more rage and anger and separation. So that's why we come and sit. So like Dogen says, sitting removes obscurities from the mind and lightens the body so that exhaustion is set aside. Obscurities from the mind, seeing only one side, putting all my own history and my own conditioning onto the other. In this case, the racist, or whom I think are racist. And getting burned out. And what he's saying is concentration gives us the strength to come back again with a fresh mind and look at what is happening in front of us in our world. So what are these dark, obscuring thoughts? There's these certainties that we have. And in my view, so much of the certainties that cause the difficulty are certainties about our strategies. We think we know the right way to take care of this problem. And rather than opening our hearts and minds to the different possibilities of making change, of creating justice, we hone in on only one way to do it. And we're defeated and become exhausted and burned out and want to distract ourselves. And we give ourselves permission to not take responsibility for this world that we live in, that we are part of. What about a possible dialogue, a possible healing? What about reaching out to those who hate? Listening to their struggle, finding a way to make a bridge. This is really complicated, of course, and I don't say it's an easy path. The practice of samadhi, the practice of dropping away our opinions and our views and dropping it all, and sitting in that wide open space can give us wisdom to act in a more compassionate way. You know, Zen also is filled, because this is a complicated issue, is filled with warnings about getting intoxicated with samadhi and becoming what we often call a Zen zombie. Someone that goes around with their eyes rolled back in their head and, oh, it is holy, holy, holy. So it's not just one way, right? It's as complicated as life is. But that's just a detour on the path. There are many stories that illustrate this detour that can be difficult when people get carried away and only want the experience of no experience of samadhi. There's one I really like, a story I came across the other day again, which I'm very fond of. It's in a text we don't use in our koan study, but it's used in the Rinzai tradition, the entangling vines. Like most koans or stories, it starts off with a monk asks his teacher. In this case, it's Lu Po, a Chinese Zen master. And the monk says, a single wayfarer, free of thought, is more worthy of veneration than the myriad Buddhas. What is the failing of the Buddhas, and what is the merit of the wayfarer? And his teacher, Lupo, answers, a white cloud blocks the mouth of the valley. Many birds returning in the evening cannot find their nests. Sounds pretty Zen, doesn't it? What could it possibly mean? In today's terms, you could say, a village Zendo student who relates to the world she or he lives in, through activity, is more worthy of veneration than the myriad Buddhas. What's wrong with the Buddhas? And what's right with the village Zendo student? Lupo answers us. He says, a white cloud blocks the mouth of the valley. Many birds returning in the evening cannot find their nests. When we get stuck in these ideas of non-duality, of having a particular experience, our ideas of what samadhi is, of what enlightenment is, we block ourselves. We block life itself. This life you have, reaching for some cloud. And in our case, I think we block our responsibilities as bodhisattvas to act in this world for the good, for racial justice, for a just allocation of resources, for caring for our home, the earth. And you know, nowadays there's this wonderful, I think it's wonderful, mainstreaming of mindfulness that's going on. You know, they're teaching mindfulness in the schools and in the corporations and in the military. And God, I wish they were teaching it in the McKinney Police Force and the Baltimore Police Force and the Ferguson Police Force and the Cleveland Police Force. But the problem is that most of this popularity is around self-enhancement, self-advancement, self-enrichment. And I just think it's sad that the samadhi is being directed towards really selfish reasons. On the other hand, Dogen assures us this. Listen what he says. Sitting in this samadhi, enlightenment becomes as natural as a dragon curled up at rest. A demon is frightened even by a picture of someone sitting in the meditation posture. How much more so by a living person who realizes the way motionless and at ease. So it may be, and I've often seen it, that a person comes to meditation practice for their own selfish, small-minded reasons. I came to meditation practice to get rid of my fear of public speaking, my fear of being seen. But that's not what happened to me. Came from my personal suffering, as many of you may have, to escape our personal suffering. But this samadhi, you know, is really powerful. And if we're not careful, we might discover that we find our true nature. who we really are in the world, what our function in the world is. I've seen it happen over and over again. It's a marvelous thing. The shift from the focus on our individual self to realizing that who we are is much bigger and we can take care of so much more. We become like this dragon that he talks about. It just kind of settles into the world. And that, I think, is wisdom. And when we settle in the way that dragon does to our samadhi, our demons, our certitude, our viciousness, our anger, our pettiness, you know, they become frightened by the power of this samadhi, of this dragon that sits and is part of everything in the world. They are frightened of the awesome presence of a bodhisattva. This bodhisattva that you are can work with the horrors of the world right now. And I think that's why we sit. We may not know that's why we sit, but that's why we sit. We're not hiding from the injustice of the world as we sit here on Sunday morning. We're arming ourselves with stability, concentration, and wisdom so that we can act, not react, but act. So I encourage you, you can make a difference. Pay attention. Sit your zazen. Enjoy your samadhi like the dragon does. And get up and don't block the way for the birds to come back to their nests. We're not living in a cloud. We're living in this world. And in a few minutes, you'll be going down and walking down the streets of Samsara Broadway. You can make a difference. Not judging those people. Feeling compassion. Finding a way. Finding a way to make a difference. Okay, I'll end with a gatha. Gathering myself, arms and legs, hands and eyes, breath and mind, the dragon rests on my lap. There is ease, there is joy, there is love, and much work to be done.